Hello and welcome to the Taylor's Tales podcast. This is Chris's Corner. I'm Chris Taylor, and today we're back with another Leadership Strategy and Tactics Guide by Jocko Willink, part four. And we're going to jump right in because this is a long series. It's one of my favorite series to write because we're dealing with meaning and stuff that we can actually apply to life. I say we, Royal We, again, I use this consistently throughout the podcast. So I want to include you jumping in to these principles. We previously were looking at the core tenets in the other podcast. And if you haven't, go back, watch those, get yourself or listen or on whatever platform, Spotify, iTunes, whatever. It's all there. Taylor's Tales is out there. We're going to start today with the most important member of the team. And you'd be thinking to yourselves immediately off the mark, well, Chris, I might not be the most important member of the team and my team, but I do my job right. And I'd say, no, you're wrong. You are the most important member of the team. You just don't know it yet. And that's cheesy, but that's how we roll. But these rules may seem a little bit too simplistic sometimes, but Jocko's doing that because he's trying to identify that, yes, they are simple, but they're hard to do. And it's really easy to say them, but it's really hard to do them. You may be thinking to yourselves, oh, it was easy for you to say, Chris. You're able to sit there in your nice comfy chair in your nice comfy room and, you know, with your nice cup of coffee and comfortable life. I can't deny any of that, sadly. But, you know, I don't know why I said sadly, but the point is that we're analyzing this so that we can become better, not because we're criticizing the situation of the analyzer or the person who's trying to get across a message that is this important, because it is important. Anyway, jumping right in, you are the most important member of the platoon, I told the point man. You are the one who leads us on the patrol. You know where we are and where we're going. You guide us all through hazards and are the eyes and ears of the platoon when it comes to sensing danger like an ambush or an improvised explosive device, an IED. It was the truth. We all counted on the point man. I had a similar conversation with the radio man. You are the most important member of the platoon. If we run into a large enemy force and we come under the threat of being overrun, it is the radio on your back and your ability to use it that are going to save us. Your ability to call the fire, to contact aircraft or tanks or other friendly forces to come and save us is what will keep us alive in a desperate situation. It will depend on you. This was also a true statement. But it was also true for the medic. It was also true for the machine gunners. It was true for everyone. So in the end, I would tell each and every member of my squad that they are the most important member of the team. Because they are. And this is really important because I think leaders need to let their subordinates know that they are an instrument to getting the work done. So many people go through work without feeling valued, like a valued member. And you'll come home on a Friday night and you'll feel like, you know, you haven't achieved anything through the week, because sometimes it feels like, you know, the world around you is a lot harder than it actually is. And having that small compliment from someone who's a little bit higher up than you, just even if it's your boss, just getting that validation can just make your week turn around like that. Some people, it can just change the way they're living, just getting a compliment or some sort of value from their leader. And I think that's what Jocko's trying to get here, is that we're going to try and get a message across to everyone that every member of the team is playing a part in getting the team to win. And we need to let them know that. I think that's, I've put that in there as an underline here, because I think it's really sort of, it makes the menial tasks not feel so menial when you have someone making them to be just as important as everyone else, because you are. You're just as important as everyone else in every job. And sometimes it's really hard to remember that. It really is. And when we're going through these sort of principles today, it's important to remember that these are the ones that I picked out, that I felt that they proved to be applicable outside of the army, outside of the military, because they're applicable to life and to business and to a lot of scenarios, because let's give you an example. If you come home and you're, you know, let's say there's a job that you or your partner don't want to do, and you belittle it and you say that I shouldn't have to do that job because I've done all of this work today. And I hear this a lot from a lot of people. It doesn't matter who you are. It's that I've done this amount of work, or I earned this amount of money, therefore I shouldn't do this. And we've talked about this in previous podcasts, is that you're therefore making the smaller tasks less important than any other of these greater tasks. And therefore you are increasing your ego. You are making yourself feel a little bit too big for your boots. And I've done this myself, and it's very hard to get out of. You have to be in the right headspace as well. Because what Jocko doesn't talk about in this is that he's a very strong-minded person. And some days, and these don't happen very often, some days some people don't want to be that good guy. They don't want to do these menial tasks. They don't want to do the right thing. And I think there's that, you know, the word laziness comes to mind, but I don't think it's that. I think it is mental tiredness. And if you're mentally tired because you've been doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over again, and that can happen when you're just trying to get your job done, or you're finishing, you know, 60 years of work, or, you know, you're going retirement, or any of these things that where you've just done a lot of mental tasks or even physical tasks, and you have this sort of person telling you that, you know, every job that you do is just as important as everyone else's, it can feel a little bit like, yeah, whatever, you know, you're making it out to be bigger than it is. But sometimes you need to remind yourself that it isn't. I know I'm not expressing this 100% clearly, but what I'm trying to get across is that some days you have good days, some days you have bad days, and it's okay to have both. But you just have to have this message in the back of your mind that everyone's job around you is just as important as yours, and the same goes each way. And that you have to try and hold your tongue sometimes when it comes down to talking to others about certain tasks. And it's not easy. It's a task that I will continue to address when it comes down to my issues. Anyway, on to the next principle. Taking care of your people with discipline. Discipline is the best way to take care of your people. From day one as a leader in the military, you're told over and over again that you have to take care of your people. But some leaders get very confused about what this means. They think taking care of your people means making sure they're comfortable, happy, coddling them, giving them as much time off as possible, and not pushing them hard. This is wrong. In fact, the opposite is true. In the SEAL teams, if you really care about your people, you won't coddle them at all. You will push them hard. You will train them hard. You will make them understand the tactics of war and the weapons and the radios and they operate. You will ensure that they are in top physical condition and prepared for mental and emotional stress of combat. You will do everything in your power to prepare them for the combat so that you can give them the highest probability that they and the rest of the team return from the battlefield. If you really care about your people, you want them to go home to their families. The best way this can happen is through hard training, and that comes from discipline. This is, again, something that is hard to translate sometimes when it comes down to Jocko's experience in the military, but I think it's quite simple in this one, is you have to be prepared for any day tasks. You can't just expect your employees to be able to just know off the bat that they have to be able to do this, do that, do this. There's a standard of learning, and I do see this, is that learning in the industry it's considered a minor, a task that isn't part of the mission. And I think this is something that the world has to reconsider. I think businesses need to start doing it before something that I've done recently within my newest job I love, is that I've been prepared, I've been trained, I've been put into this new position, I've been given all of the possible training that is out there, and I've been given the time to do it, and now I'm ready to execute. Now, if I didn't have that and I was told to just execute, which is more of the common theme within industry, is to expect the execution on the day one. Now, you may be saying, well, Chris, I've got qualifications and therefore I'm expected, because I've got those qualifications, to come into the role and execute. And because I'm a senior person, I don't have time to retrain. I have to go into this senior role to pay my bills. Now, I would say to you, yeah, you're right. You do have to pay your bills. You do have to pay for a family and you do have to do all these things. And what is a 25-year-old going through a book going to help you out with? Well, not much. But this the idea is here is that by preparing, by giving them this good example, by being a leader, and you know, as you are that person who is highly qualified and is going into the execution job, maybe you aren't the person who's going to be gaining the most from this, but you can expect those below you not to be immediately coming in and executing just because you are. Think about it for a second. Are you really thinking that the people who are below you, who you've been in their position before, because in order to get to your position, you have to train to be able to get there, that they would not want to learn first and not have that self-discipline that you've learned over the years? I think there needs to be a phase to be able to train that in. It's not immediate. You don't just get a bunch of 21-year-olds coming out of university and being able to go straight into jobs and being like, right, I need a comfortable life and I need to be coddled. No, most people want a challenge. Most people want to come in and, you know, earn the money, but also on a daily basis, in order to prolong that mental fatigue and to prolong that physical sort of workout, they're looking to have that challenge to be able to keep them alert. Or at least I think that's the case, unless you're looking for this coddling, in which case I can't help you. I think there's a nice passage here. Of course, this drive must be balanced. You cannot drive your people so hard that you can break them. Burnout is real, and it happens on the battlefield and in business. Be cautious about and don't let it happen. Taking care of your people also means knowing when you back off and when to give them a break. But don't think your job is to allow your people to take the easy path. The easy path leads to misery. The path of discipline leads to freedom. Again, there's a lot of simple terms here, you know. The easy path leads to misery. What, to me, there's again, putting it on a day-to-day life is hard, but in the long run, if you think about it over a course of a 5-year period and you take that easy path, right, you can map out really easily where you're going to be at the end of that 5 years. You can say to yourself, well, I'm going to do this job for 5 years and I'm going to cruise it. And well, yes, you will. You'll get paid. You'll get all these things. And by the end of the 5 years, if you're doing the good job well, you may have moved up, you may have moved down, but you will have cruised it, so there won't be any serious gain. And I don't think that's what a lot of people are looking for. But the path of discipline leads to freedom. Is the idea is that by the end of that difficult period, you're going to mentally have pushed yourself, physically have pushed yourself further and further. And I think the idea is that by that time, each time you reach that peak, you're sort of beating back those easy days, but you're also allowing yourself to have a few freed up days. And so it's, you're learning and you're progressing at the same time. But if you take the easy route, it's kind of like you're not learning, you're not progressing, you're just graying out. And something that's really interesting at the moment is you're seeing this in society is that we've all got this. Everyone who can work from home is working from home. And they're working, but there's no outlet. There's no sort of ability to, it's all work and no play. And because we see this, we're currently seeing a mental sort of health crisis at the moment. And so what we're seeing here is we're seeing this path of discipline, because it's so hard for people to just work and just see this year out. But I just have a feeling. I mean, I can tell you right now, it's gonna be hard for everybody. No matter who you are, you know, there's no easy path. And to say that, you know, certain one group of people are gonna do better than others and or less or others is a real easy way to get out of a conversation, I would say. Because at the end of the day, everybody has an opinion, and the thing that a lot of people would like to say is that they don't deserve to have that opinion because of this or because of that. And it's wrong. And I think that I may be going on a tangent here, but the point is that this year of discipline is going to bring some gems out of a big lump of coal. Relevant, seeing it's Christmas time, I think, yeah. That's probably the best metaphor you're going to get out of me for this chapter. Moving on, imposed discipline. So where we've talked about, you know, a leader's perspective, we're going to talk about a leader's perspective on imposing that. Optimal discipline in a team is not imposed by the leader. It is chosen by the team itself. Optimal discipline is self-discipline. But teams do not always have self-discipline. They may not understand the rewards that will come with it. When that happens, it may be necessary for a certain level of discipline to be carefully applied and imposed so the team understands the benefits. Perhaps there's a new, more rigid process a leader is trying to get his or her team members to adopt. But as it is common with change, they are resistant. Let's say the leader does the right thing and they explain the why behind the change and clearly states the advantages that will come with the implementation. But despite this information, the team members' attitude do not change. They refuse to impose the discipline on themselves. God, that's a difficult situation. At this time, with caution, the leader must apply pressure. Listen, we have to give this a try, at least get some feedback, or we need to give this a try before the company wastes more money on it. Or, if we don't make changes, we're going to fall behind and it is going to cost us all. Any of these statements are relatively soft ways of pushing the team to try the new process. That's a really, I like that, because at the end of the day, if you're like a tyrant, people are going to just feel like, you know, you're just going to be hitting a shield over and over again. It's just going to bounce back off. It's this sort of small gesture to push. Why not just order them to implement the new method? Why not just force discipline upon them? If you know you're right, why not? Unfortunately, that is the least effective way to implement change. Ah, well, it looks like I've read this book before. when you give the direct order and impose your will on the team, you're removing your subordinates' input from the equation. They are simply doing what you told them to do with zero control or contribution. When people have no input, they have no ownership. And when they have no ownership, they have no personal stake driving the mission's success. As soon as they hit resistance, they will stop forward progress. I like that even more. That's so true, is that if it's not their plan, or if they don't have some input into the plan, why would they, and they don't agree with it, why would they implement it? And even if they do know the why behind it, there's got to be some sort of control, no matter what level you are in the hierarchy. Just being somewhere in the hierarchy gives you a little bit of power, but also on top of that, being the ability to communicate with your superiors and understand the process, work within the process, and if you disagree with the process, voice your opinion. But not all the time, because otherwise that becomes a nuisance to progress. Instead, it's indefinitely better to get people to change voluntarily, to embrace the change and take ownership of it so that they can drive towards success. Look at the simple example of physical exercise. Sure, you can make people show up and do it, but you will not get maximum effort from them. Maximum effort can only come from individuals, and they will put forth maximum effort if they actually want to. Really good point here. Progress will be limited, I've highlighted here. Because if you work out, and we all have those days where we don't want to work out, we've got a headache, something along those lines, it's not those days that I worry about. I worry about the first few weeks of people where they take it lightly. They'll take a workout, for instance. They'll say, I'm going to do 3 days this week and I'm going to work it out. And they'll do 2 days and they'll think, oh, I've worked really hard today. I'm so tired. I'm not going to do the third day. And then the next week they get to 2 days and they'll be like, oh, you know what? I'm so tired. I don't have the time. I'll do 1 day next week, and so on and so forth. And it just gets less and less until they stop working out altogether. It's that going into the whatever exercise you're willing to do and having the mindset of wanting to do it and not being forced to do it, not being told by others around you, but explaining the reasons why you're going to benefit from it. Less stress, mental clarity, not feel so angry all the time, not be overweight, have less risk for heart disease. All of these reasons are reasons for physical fitness, but it's also going to clear your mind for when you're at work and you need that mental ability, that mental endurance. Now, this is just reasons for fitness, but I'm highlighting this why in the corner here. The why. Why are we doing this? Because if you don't do something within a mission, you don't understand why, and you don't question the why, well, you're going to end up in this rut that Jocko's highlighting here. And it's not a fun rut. You get angry. You get stressed with people above you because you have no control over something. And no control over something leads to resentment. And resentment leads to anger, anger to hate, and so on. And it's that process I've seen it happen. And it leads to a blow up, a volcanic blow up of anger towards someone for not having control. Moving on. Always remember that imposed discipline is an uphill battle. It's not the best way to lead. Instead, whenever possible, explain the why. Make sure the team members understand the benefits to the mission and to themselves. And finally, give them as much ownership as possible so they execute driven not by imposed discipline, but by will of their own intrinsic discipline. Don't need to explain that. That's linked very well with my previous statement. If I do say so myself. Pride. There you go. That links up with it. Just showing pride there. That's it. There you go. I like that. That's it's a nice little link through the podcast. Pride, something that I have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, and knocking it down and having to stifle it sometimes. And sometimes you don't feel like it. Sometimes you're in a bad mood, and therefore your ego's up. You feel like you should be defending yourself, and so on and so forth. We're going to tackle this now. Pride is one of the seven deadly sins, and yet it can be a powerful force for good. The dichotomy between the opposite ends of the spectrum can be hard to understand and rein in properly. Pride can tear apart individuals and team, yet it can also be an aspirational influence that drives successful positive behavior. The term pride can be interpreted different ways, and even a same exact statement about pride can have different meanings depending how it is construed. For instance, he took a lot of pride in how he looked, meant that the individual presented himself professionally and confidently. But you've also got, on the other hand, excessive pride can lead to arrogance. Group members can become so convinced of their own greatness that they no longer feel the need to work hard, practice, rehearse, and try to improve. Their pride means they don't respect the people they are competing against. When pride becomes arrogance, the ego inflates, stagnation ensues, and the downward spiral begins. Yes, it is a spiral. I think that when you have this feeling of aboveness against other people, you start to stop improving. And again, we talked about earlier this ability to stagnate. And he's repeated it here, Jocko. He's talked about this stagnation. That's what I'm talking about, where this gray at the moment. It's really easy at the moment to work from home and stagnate and not improve and just get on with it and just say, when coronavirus ends, that's when I'll start. That's when I'll get better. I got highlighted this morning about that when I was talking to my dad. I think he really highlighted to me that if you were to just say that, if you were to just say it will get better, when you get to pass this point, you aren't allowing yourself to improve now, and you are stagnating, and you're cornering yourself into a position, you're forcing yourself into non-improvement. It takes a lot of thinking to be able to understand that. It takes a lot of just sort of want to embrace the now, even if the now isn't as good as the later, and that the grass is greener always on the other side, and that this is an opportunity. And it's hard. It's so hard to not be angry and not be depressed and all of these things. And I'm lucky enough not to deal with depression, but I do suffer from anger, and that's something that I have to address here, is that pride is part of that anger. And we're going to talk about on the other hand here. On the other hand, pride can also be immensely positive for the team to have. Pride can be guiding, an unseen force that keeps team members working hard, giving their best effort and holding themselves and others on the team to the absolute highest standard. Have some pride in your work is a common admonition on an individual or team whose performance is lackluster. It means you need to actually care about what you're doing and then do your best. Again, bringing back that common theme of really understanding the why in your work in order to take pride in it. Much of the pride in the military unit is derived first from what the unit has been through, the wars it's been in, the historic battles it's fought, the decorations and accolades it's received. When it was deployed to Iraq, it was common for US Army and Marine Corps units to bring historical documents on deployment with them to hang on the walls of their tactical operations center, their chow halls, or their ready rooms. Unit flags and battle streamers would be ceremonially positioned in prominent locations in barracks or briefing rooms. It was impressive to see. This is something I've seen in business where you see at people's desks the trophies or the awards they've won. And it's really interesting to see because for some of them, they're like, you'll see the awards and they're really high. And it's like when you see somebody who's a doctor or has a master's degree, they'll hang up high in their office. And it's positioned really high up because they're proud. They're proud of the achievement they've accomplished. And similar here, Jocko's really highlighting this, is that the previous experience within life, it's right. This is a point to be proud of, to use that sin, as it's called, to bolster the recognition within your team of the power and the achievement it's had in the past. When the past is held up and put on display in honor, it becomes the standard for all of us to pursue. Ideally, the goal is to have the team members strive for high standard individually, to have them hold themselves and one another in the level of excellence. Optimally, a leader doesn't have to constantly police infrastructure, motivate them to give their best. If there is pride, the team polices itself. The team will not allow substandard performances. Anyone who slacks off is corrected not by the leadership, but by the team itself. That is the power of pride. I love that. That's so good. Killer. So killer. Because not only to take pride in your work, but for your team around you to be proud of the work they do. I've had conversations before where what happens if you don't believe in the job that you're doing, for instance, and you're doing it for money purposes. I think it's a very short-term goal and very short-term sort of mindset. And you'll find the job 10 times harder to do because you don't have pride in your work. And I think that Jocko highlights here that if you have pride in your work, if you want to achieve with your team around you, you're going to find it so much easier. You're going to enjoy coming to work. If you see these objectives on the board that your boss or senior management have set out for you, and you're like, they don't apply to me. I'm only at this company for this amount of time, and I don't care what happens. You're going to find that everyone around you is going to harass you, because for those who do care, they're going to be just on you. Then be the person who's leading, setting the example, getting these objectives done because you're proud of the job you do. I think the first thing is pursue excellence as well. Pursuing performance is really important. Let's say you're in this position when you see this short-term goal. Well, put it in this perspective. You want that great reference at the end of this. So have some pride in the current role so that at the end of this, you get this amazing reference for your next job that you truly want. Because from there, damn, you're going to be getting the person who hires you is going to be like, damn, he did a job that nobody wanted to do, and or she didn't want to do. And the people at there said he or she did a great job. And damn, it was not a fun job to do. Therefore, this person must be most reliable. And I can't wait to hire them into this ideal job that they want. It's a lot of hypotheticals, but damn, does it make sense to me? Moving on. Yes, man. As a leader, you should not want to be surrounded by yes men, people who agree with everything you say. As a subordinate, you should not be a yes man. You should speak up when something doesn't make sense. This concept sometimes worries leaders because essentially what I'm saying is that there is that subordinates should always be pushing back against their leaders, always asking their leaders why things are being done a certain way, and always offering up information, recommendations from their perspective on the front line. That scares some leaders. Some leaders would rather just have their subordinates do exactly what they're told to do. That is a bad idea. As an example, let's say I'm commanding three platoons out on the back battlefield. I'm toward the rear of the formation. The lead element, 1st Platoon, suddenly gets fired upon by an elevated enemy position with several soldier bunkers and multiple machine guns, with interlocking fields of fire. 1st Platoon retreats to a small depression safe from the machine gun fire. They report back to me that they've received fire from the enemy, but I'm anxious and want to move forward, so I reply to the 1st Commander, 1st Platoon Commander, in order to take your platoon and assault and destroy the enemy bunkers. The order is simple enough. Attack. But there is a major problem. Attacking multiple enemy bunkers up a hill in the open when the enemy has several machine guns with interlocking fields of fire is not just a bad idea, it's a horrible one. Every person who assaults that bunker will die. So you don't want somebody who says, "Roger that." You want somebody who objects to this. If you want optimal performance, don't just count on your own brain power. Instead, encourage the rest of your team to think and question you. Don't just surround yourself with yes men. They do nothing to help you or your team. If this makes you uncomfortable to get pushback or questions from your team, check your ego. It's probably a little inflated. I think Jock is being a little bit, he's reeling himself in, because what he really wants to say is, you know, check your ego. You're being a dumbass. Think about this, you know. Think about what you're saying to people. You know, if your orders don't seem right to you, or they seem a little bit like, would I do them myself? Would I do the orders? That's where you question, because you're saying to yourself, if I wouldn't do my own orders, why on earth would I get someone else to do them? And it shouldn't really be, you know, a lot of people have difficulty with hierarchies and orders and structure. And to those people, I say, structure and order can create what we just talked about, pride in your unit. Being ability to climb up is that ability to deal with structure and to be able to do with routine. Routine keeps you out of this mind space of the yes man who will inevitably fail because they're consistently dreaming of a reality that doesn't exist. Because reality is the question, why are we doing this? And for the commander who's not willing to pursue their own sort of commands and do them themselves, and just is willing to have it yes men do this, well, they'll end up with many dead people, or in the business world, many people quitting their job. Moving on, the exception to no bad teams, only bad leaders. We've talked about this before. No bad teams, only bad leaders. We're not the first people to make this claim. Napoleon said that there are no bad regiments, only bad colonels. And US Army Colonel David Hackworth said in the book About Face that there's no bad leader, bad units, only bad officers. Yet there are still people who feel that a bad team is a legitimate excuse for bad performance. That is simply not true. There's no situation and no exceptions where a subordinate is ultimately responsible for bad performance of a team. It's always the leader's fault. That being said, there is an exception to the rule that there are no bad teams, only bad leaders. The exception is, it is possible to have a good team that delivers outstanding performance despite a bad leader. I like this one because I like the idea that subordinates take the responsibility to say, right, we've got somebody above us who isn't that great, but we're going to make them look bloody brilliant. And we're going to make them look better than they actually are. Because if it's my job to code and I've got somebody above me who I don't necessarily think is a good leader, but if I want to pursue a higher role, well, outperforming and making him look brilliant is not only the goal, it's the goal of all goals, because not only am I going to get recognized above him or her, I'm going to be recognized and it's going to be like you're in for the next position, you're in for that next role of aboveness. And if I'm running the company and I see people below me taking responsibility and taking pride in their work and again, making the bad leaders look good, it's just going to make it so much easier for me to look at that bad leader and think, well, we don't really need you anymore. And we can get rid of them and then replace them with a good leader and make the performance even better than it already is. Again, hypotheticals. So how does this happen? It happens when there are subordinates in the team who lead regardless of their rank. They're tactful individuals who know how to lead despite not having been given official authority. These subordinate leaders have found ways to lead without offending the structural leader, because the structural leader might not be able to deal with someone below them in the chain of command running things. If the structural leader has a big ego, they likely won't listen to any of their subordinates. For that reason, in a successful team that is being led by junior people, the structural leader does deserve credit for having the humility to let his or her subordinate run things. Without humility, the structural leader would resist subordinate to try to lead. This would ultimately counter the effects of the subordinates and the team would fail. So, you know, again, there's always an exception to the rule. So while it's important to recognize that leadership is the most important factor in the success of a team or organization, it's also important to remember that leadership may not always come from the structural leader sitting on top of the wire diagram. While a bad team is without question the result of a bad leader, a good team is not necessarily the result of a good leader. You must know your people well enough to recognize and capitalize on that fact. I love that. Capitalizing. I was talking about this with a friend earlier. Capitalizing on errors. Well, in this case, we're capitalizing on a bad leader. We're capitalizing on a situation that isn't great, that isn't perfect, but we're going to do great anyway. Isn't that what we're in at the moment? Is it not this year of 2020 the perfect time to do the best you can? Because if you can do good now, damn, you're going to do so good later on, you know? Like, this is the worst possible scenario. So if you're doing good now, imagine how well you're going to be doing when it's like, I don't know, 2025 and everything's going amazing. The stock market's up. You've got the best job. You're doing amazing and you've got everything around you and you're living the dream. Imagine how well you're doing then, because in this scenario, this is this worst scenario. From then on, it becomes a smooth road. It's like when you go running, and a lot of people like to run on flats. They like to run on steady, straight roads. I like to run on hills. I like a real high, hilly, and you'll see the route I do around this area. It's got an incline that is insane. It's that ability to withstand and keep a below an 8 minute mile pace on those hills, because when you run on flats, my God, you're hitting faster. You're getting to this below sub 7:30, running speed. Because if you can run around the worst tracks, running around the best tracks is easy, and it's running in the worst conditions can create the best conditions. I think there's a saying that I think it's something along the lines of terrible times create strong men, easy times create weak men. And that's not just like a sexist sort of statement. That statement is engulfing everyone when it says man, men, man. So now we're moving on to part two of the book, Leadership Tactics. And we're going to cover a couple of the sections here. We're going to cover two of my favorites from this area, the becoming a leader section. And we're going to start off with how to succeed as a new leader. Now, as someone who's in their mid-20s and, is looking to pursue that leader role someday and is constantly trying to learn and better himself or her, in any case, I'm trying to engulf you, the listener, in this as well. If you're trying to get better and you one day want to lead and I think these are some really nice 10 points that you can refer back to. And I think, if you buy this book and get it yourself, it's great to go back to. So starting off, be humble. It is an honor to be in a leadership position. Your team is counting on you to make the right decision. Yep. Love that. It's tough to be humble. Don't act like you know everything. You don't. The team knows that. Ask smart questions. I don't like that. I like that, you know, clearly, obviously, don't act like you know everything. That's obvious. I think that's a straight off the bat, because nobody knows everything. And when you get to the age of 80, you still have the same mindset as you do when you were 18. So it's, you just have more experience. And I've talked about this before, that the idea of being an adult is semi a lie told to children so that they stay in line. The truth is that we're still the same people we were when we were children. It's just that we have more experience and we like to label ourselves with this nice idea that we are adults, and therefore we have this title that we can pat ourselves on the back and say, well done, you've got past childhood. Don't act like you know everything. You don't. The team knows that. Ask smart questions. The bit that I don't like there is the ask smart questions. There are no smart questions. There are only questions, because there's no such thing as a dumb question, because to ensue that there's a smart question, you assume there are bad questions. There are no bad questions. There are only terrible answers. Just like there are only bad leaders and bad units. Jocko should know better than that. Listen, ask for advice and heed it. Really listen. It's tough to really listen, because in the back of your mind, something's clicking each time. You're not really listening to me right now. You're thinking of a response. You're thinking of the next thing that's coming to your mind. And that's really difficult to push back and actually sort of just absorb. Treat people with respect, regardless of rank. Everyone is a human being and plays an important role in the team. Treat them that way. Take care of your people and they will take care of you. I mean, I love that. Treat people with respect. But I think also something that I've realized is that the better a team is, the more they feel like family. And the more they feel like family, the more you can treat them with that respect, but also treat them in an environment where you're winning together and it feels so much better. That win feels 10 times better when you are a team that respect one another, but feel like a unit, a family. Take ownership of failures and mistakes. Really easy to write down, really hard to actually do. Pass credit for success up and down the chain. Yep. I think that saying you did a good job is a fantastic thing to do. So many people withhold that from people. We talked about this earlier. Give credit where credit's due. Work hard. As the leader, you should be working harder than anyone else on the team. No job is beneath you. Have integrity. Do what you say. Say what you do. Don't lie or up or down the chain of command. Yeah. Yeah. Integrity is a big thing. Being honest can ruffle a few feathers. Sometimes you feel like because you don't like a person, you won't tell them the truth because you don't want them to have that on you. And it goes for the people you love. You tell them things sometimes so that they don't have to deal with some of the facts. It goes both ways. But telling the truth, it's lifting that weight off your back. It's taken me a while to get with that. Be balanced. Extreme actions and opinions are usually not good. Well, no. Looks like I'm out. Being balanced is, yes, well. Move on. Be decisive. When it's time to make a decision, make one. Build relationships. What is your main goal? That is your main goal as a leader. A team is a group of people who have relationships and trust in one another. Otherwise, it's just disconnected, incoherent cluster of people. As I said earlier, family. You should get that cluster connected like atoms. It's unbreakable. Lastly, get the job done. That's the purpose of a leader. To lead a team in accomplishing a mission. If you don't accomplish the mission, you fail as a leader. Performance counts. Performance, yeah. Above all, we've talked about this before, get the job done and do it well. Then you can start thinking about the smaller things. So no one expects you to know everything. Just, yeah, you just got there. You need time to learn. I love this. This is in italics here. This is highlighted because no one expects you as a young leader to immediately just snap in. I talked about this earlier as well, is that the idea of just coming in and executing, if a leader expects you to come in as a new young leader and get the job done, they're not being a good leader. They're not giving you that time to adjust. Yeah, you should come in and do a good job, but yes, you should be prepared for that job. How to be chosen to lead. The number one way to give yourself a chance for a promotion and leadership is simple and straightforward. You guys know how this is going to go down. Of course, we've spoken a bit about it before. It's performance. Perform, perform, perform. Do your job and do it well. Work hard, be the first person to show up work, and the last person to leave. Now, I agree and I disagree with this. So it's probably good. This is me showing I am understanding the points. I am going to voice my opinion, even if it is invalid, maybe in this case, because Jocko's not here to defend himself. But efficiency isn't really taken into case here. It's quite an archaic term of being the first in, last out. I disagree. I think get your job done and do it efficiently. Because if you get this into your mind where you're like, I'm going to get in there before my boss and I'm going to leave later than my boss, you're going to burn out. You're going to burn out fast because not everyone can be Jocko and not everyone can be the ability to wake up at 4 a.m. and kick ass and take names and do it until 11 o'clock at night. So set yourself a standard. In my opinion, get to work at 8:30 or in my case, 8/8:15. Get that job done throughout the day. Get yourself a nice hour break at lunchtime. Refresh, come back, kick ass and take names again until around 4:30, 5 o'clock. And then you've got so much time in the evening to spend working on yourself, like working out, doing some meditation, reading some books, etc. Doing some stuff. Because if you don't think that you can do your job in the time that you're given, but that's the main question of, are you doing your job well in the first place? Again, bringing that performance back, bring it back to the ideas that we're seeing here. Volunteer for the most challenging tasks, projects, and missions that no one else wants to do, including those that are simple, mundane, and unrewarding. The next thing to do, be selected as a leader is to not focus on yourself. Don't make being chosen as a leader your goal. Instead, make your goal helping your team win. Don't feel you need to be the person in charge of everything. When someone else has to step up and take the lead, then be a good follower. The more you help the team win, the more people will want you on your team. The more people see you being humble and not clamoring for the spotlight, the more trust and clout you gain. Lovely. Of course, you can be too humble. If you constantly defer from accepting leadership opportunities and always let someone else take the lead, you might give the impression that you don't want to lead, which will result in you not being put in the leadership position. So as I've said, volunteer to lead whenever possible, but don't make your primary focus. Make your primary focus helping the team accomplish its goals. This attitude will eventually get you noticed, and you will get a chance. Get your chance, I should say. I think that's a really nice place to end on here. Being given a chance through performance, working hard, and doing the right thing for the team. Isn't that all we ever want? Is that if we're in a job we like, great. That's number one, being in that job. Being surrounded by people you want to be in, because as we've said here, it's really important to build relationships. Working hard for that team because you have pride in that team. And then from there, having that pride and putting the hours in and being effective with that time. And then being an all-rounder from there. Doing all the tasks that are assigned to you and asking for the ones that you don't. And showing that you have potential. From there, you're limitless. You will be given your chance. And the reason why I say you, and I'm hoping me as well, that, you know, I've got to believe in this stuff. Because if this isn't true, then what have I been talking about for, you know, 4 hours for these podcasts? It doesn't matter. The point is, we're accepting that we don't know everything, and we're accepting that we need to improve, and we're accepting that we need to move forward in life to be able to get better. And that's what this is about. this has been part four of the Leadership Strategy and Tactics Guide by Jocko Willink. This has been a Taylor's Tales podcast. This is Chris's Corner. I'm your host, Chris Taylor. And as always, I hope to see you next week for another podcast.